Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, December 21st, 2010, the winter solstice. And I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-host, Lavendar. We've got a very important show for you this evening. Our special guests are Richard and Karen Dolan. Mr. Dolan's book, AD, After Disclosure, is a momentous work co-authored with Bryce Zabel, whose many primetime network television series are familiar to most people. Our friend and voice actor, Paul Costanzo, has recorded excerpts from AD for us, so we'll be starting with that before Mr. Dolan joins us this evening, and Richard's wife, Karen, will join us in the second half of the show. Before I introduce Lavendar and Richard Dolan, I'd like to mention that if you register for free here at Blog Talk Radio and click the word follow at the top of our page, you'll get an email notice when our next show is coming and the topic of the show, all the information you need. All of our past shows are available on demand at blogtalkradio.com/Starseed Radio Academy. If you're new to our show, you've missed a lot of chapters, so we highly recommend listening to all of them since they're interconnected with critical information for Starseed that you won't find elsewhere. If you haven't visited our main site yet, which is starseedhotline.com, we have a lot of vital information for Starseed in our vault of knowledge. If you want to speak with us privately, the toll-free number for our website is 888-881-0881. And now, I would like to welcome my co-host, Lavendar.
Well, good evening, Arielle, and to all of our Starseed listeners. This is going to be a great show,
We're going to start off with a presentation of the book that one of our friends and voice actor, Paul Costanzo, as I said earlier in the intro, he recorded an excerpt from Chapter 1 and another excerpt called Press Conference. And these are scenarios of how it very likely will go when the announcement of disclosure is made. So we're going to start off by giving you a preview of the book before Richard's interview. So I'm just going to get right to it because we do have a lot for you this evening. So here is an excerpt from AD, After Disclosure, Chapter 1. This is read by Paul Costanzo.
Chapter 1. Day 1. The day everything changes. However long the night, the dawn will break. African proverb. That was yesterday. Yesterday is over. It's a different day. Eminem. Love the way you lie. White House correspondents are in an uproar. A few hours earlier, the press secretary told them that the president would appear in the late afternoon to make a major announcement on a topic of global importance. This brought howls of protest concerning the lateness of it all, a bit of unfortunate timing that guaranteed missed deadlines and high-stress live shots. Even while jammed into their windowless cramped cubicles and Spartan offices in the basement of the West Wing, these elite journalists from around the world had known for days that something was going on upstairs. They had reported about the late-night comings and goings around other power centers of Washington, D.C., but no reporter broke a story about what it meant. Instead, they tried to draw out the truth from each other without revealing any of their own suspicions. Now, in the James S. Brady press briefing room, the anxiety is palpable. Each of the lucky occupants of the 49 assigned seats claimed their space early to avoid poaching. Meanwhile, the rest of the room is packed, with nearly as many reporters standing on the sidelines. This is not the first time they have been told of an inconvenient forthcoming announcement, but no one can remember one coming this late on a Friday. The reporter for the Associated Press, now seated front row center, scribbles potential first questions. He stops, however, when the correspondent for National Public Radio, seated in the row immediately behind, wonders half-jokingly, to no one in particular, if it matters that the stock market just closed. The news reaches them that the president is on the way. The informal betting pool run by the photographers is closed to new wagers. The short odds now tilt toward military action against a terrorist training camp, followed by a radical new trade deal with China. The acknowledgement of a classified U.S. defense technology remains a long shot that could pay off nicely. The president does not show up alone. He enters with key members of the U.S. Congress, the Secretary of Defense, the Director of Central Intelligence, and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. This assembly of power seems to favor the military angle. Then someone notices that the Secretary of Commerce is also inexplicably standing with the group. The Commander-in-Chief of the United States of America checks his watch and steps up to the familiar podium. After consultation with key members of our defense and intelligence community, the President begins, including the officials accompanying me here at this podium, it has been made clear to me that there is persuasive evidence that the Earth has been and is currently being interacted with by one or more intelligent non-human species. Within a single minute, the world has changed. The president preaches calm, although deep inside he is a bit panicked too. He has only last week learned the details of this reality himself. He explains that recent highly visible sightings of UFOs, including a mass sighting that had been well documented, caused him to demand a full investigation into what the United States government knew on the subject. Despite the issues that disclosure of this fact now obviously raises, I do believe that the people of the United States and the people of Earth have a right to know, continues the President. Because of the need for calm debate, I have taken the precautionary move of making the National Guard available to any state governor who feels that its use is necessary to maintain public safety. Additionally, to protect our nation's economic security, through my executive authority, I am closing the nation's banks for a period of 1 week and ordering the closure of the stock market until further notice. From here, the press conference becomes decidedly more challenging. Under questioning, the President promises an ongoing, transparent review of all classified files dealing with the UFO phenomenon and the ET presence. This is to be supervised by members of Senate and House Intelligence Committees. He even announces the formation of an Office of Contact Affairs. Meanwhile, foreign leaders worldwide have begun to make similar announcements, part of a coordinated effort at disclosure that rolls across the time zones of the Earth. Even the Pope will speak to thousands from his balcony at the Vatican Sunday at noon. The President does not take all the heat alone. This is why he has brought the Secretary of Commerce and the Secretary of Defense to answer some of the pointed questions in the news conference that will follow. That news conference will be the most eventful one the world has ever seen, creating more headlines, spinning off more live shots, and generating more demand for follow-up than anything we have ever seen before, or ever will after. This disclosure scenario only serves purposes of illustration. It is possible that the lifting of the veil will not originate in the United States, or even involve its elected leader. It could even come courtesy of insiders within the secrecy group itself, who force the issue into the open and take the entire world by surprise. There are many roads that can be taken on the journey to truth. Whatever specific actions precede the announcement, however, the first 24 hours will be like none that have ever existed before. The world has never experienced a planetary event of this magnitude. The existential shock of the Kennedy assassination, the dark impact of 9/11, the reverent awe of the moon landing, none reached the level of this story. The day will become the premier "Where were you?" moment for all people who live through it. For the rest of their lives, they will talk about what they were doing when they first heard the news. History will have a new dividing line, one that heralds the first day of a new world, the end of an old one. Remarks by the President on the Reality of Extraterrestrial Life, Friday, 5/14/21, 4:15 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. The President. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. Applause. Please have a seat. I'll be making a brief announcement, followed by a statement from the Secretary of Defense and the Secretary of Commerce. After all of us have spoken, we'll take your questions. I'll make note of the time now. It is 4:14 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. In cities across the world, including the capitals of China, Russia, India, Brazil, as well as our European allies, including specifically the United Kingdom, Germany, France, Italy, and Spain, and including the Vatican, a total of 103 countries involved, I believe, the same basic announcement is being made, some simultaneously, others later, depending on time zone. The President checks his watch. All right, then. The time is now 4:15 p.m. By now, most of us are familiar with the so-called Montreal event. This occurred 17 days ago in the skies above the city of Montreal, when an object hovered in plain sight above the citizens there for some 11 minutes. This object did not have wings. It was not a helicopter. Nor did it make any sound. The object was seen by tens of thousands of people, maybe more, widely videotaped, photographed by professionals and amateurs alike, and was recorded by Montreal International Airport's radar at its air traffic control center. Additionally, U.S. intelligence satellites received and confirmed tracking data. Most people who saw the news reports rightly questioned what exactly the object was. I know I did. When I first heard about it in my morning intelligence briefing, I requested a meeting with the Joint Chiefs, and I put the question to them directly, was this object one of ours? Their response was in the negative. I asked them if they had any knowledge as to who was in control of this object, given that it appeared to be intelligently controlled with a physical structure and performance capabilities that I am unfamiliar with. I was told that such knowledge was classified and that they would look into clearing me. Those of you who know me well also know that the answer I received, no matter how well-intentioned, was unsatisfactory. Accordingly, on your behalf, I have sought direct answers to my questions. I am sorry it has taken so long, but this afternoon, I believe, I can provide at least a partial answer. The President drinks from his water glass. After consultation with key members of our defense and intelligence community, including the officials accompanying me here at this podium, it has been made clear to me that there is persuasive evidence that the Earth has been and is currently being interacted with by one or more intelligent non-human species. Our analysis is that the object which was observed in Montreal was one of their craft. Despite the issues that disclosure of this fact now obviously raises, I do believe that the people of the U.S. and the people of Earth have a right to know. In my consultations with our allies and with other countries around the world, the consensus was reached that, while some of us might have preferred to have more time, events have overtaken us, and we can wait no longer. I want to emphasize two things immediately. First, there is virtually no evidence at this time that we are under attack. In fact, the opposite seems to be true. To say that we are under some kind of observation seems more accurate. The Secretary of Defense will speak in a moment, and he can address directly the steps that are being taken as we speak to secure the nation and the world. Second, I am, through a separate executive order, creating an Office of Contact Affairs, which will be staffed and funded as a part of our Department of Homeland Security. It has been given the mandate of reporting directly to me about the scope of this current visitation. I have concurrently directed the Attorney General to begin her own investigation into the nature and content of apparent secrecy with which some of these facts have long been held. Because of the need for calm debate, I have taken the precautionary move of making the National Guard available to any state governor who feels that it is needed to keep the public order. Additionally, to protect our nation's economic security through my executive authority, I am closing the nation's banks for a period of 1 week and ordering the closure of the stock market until further notice. After the Secretary of Defense addresses the national security component of this situation, the Secretary of Commerce will be able to speak directly to the issue of the steps being taken to see that the nation's economy and monetary supply are stable and secure. Now, before we get to that, let me speak directly to our nation's children and young people. It is quite clear that the facts I have confirmed today are disturbing. Like your parent, I'm sure you have many, many questions, and that some of you are scared. Over the weekend, we will be addressing as many of those questions as possible. But I want you to know that you are safe. Your homes are safe. Our nation is safe. We are entering a new era. That much is clear. But we do so with strength and confidence, and an abiding belief that humanity has much to give to other life forms that may exist in the vast universe we live in, and that we also can learn much from these visitors. To the media, the press secretary assures me that you will find full information packets and hard drives with a selection of photos, videos, and reports which I have unclassified through presidential order. The Attorney General will begin a thorough review of other material in consultation with the Congress and the chairs of the House and Senate Intelligence Committees as to what can be released in the future and in what time frame. I ask your patience. The process will be difficult, yet today we begin it together. So thank you all very much. The Secretary of Defense will speak now. The Secretary of Defense takes the podium. End. 4:21 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time.
Hello, Richard Olin.
Hey, Richard. This is Lavender from Starseed Hotline, and we're going to record our session because you had another engagement happen this evening.
Indeed.
So we're going to just record it, and because we have a lot of emails that we sent out, and people are really wanting to hear what you have to say, and a lot of our Starseed listeners have ordered your book, After Disclosure.
Oh, my goodness.
And so all they're just sitting there with their books, and they're ready to hear what you have to say. And hopefully in the next hour, we're going to have your wife, Karen, who's going to come on and talk afterwards. So I'm very thrilled to have Karen come on the show.
Fabulous, fabulous. And I'm very much looking forward to having the chance to chat with you. Thanks for being flexible enough to do this as a pre-record as well.
Yeah, thank you. So why don't we just start at the beginning. First, I'd like to say that you being our featured guest, Richard, about your book, AD After Disclosure, The People's Guide to Life After Contact, which will be so meaningful to our Starseed listeners. So, Richard, let's start with the beginning of your quest. Let's talk about your childhood and how you became interested in UFOs and celestial contact.
Sure. I grew up in the New York City area, in a very working class, kind of working environment. My dad was a police officer, New York City cop. My mom was a nurse. And I grew up partly in Brooklyn, partly on Long Island, in a very, like, middle class kind of neighborhood. I played sports, a lot of baseball. I was a very motivated student. I was always, I guess you could say, an A student. Worked very hard. I was interested in getting good grades and a very motivated learner, I guess, throughout my whole life. I've always been a very kind of intense sort of questing kind of person, always searching for answers. One of my teachers in college described me years later as a seeker. And I thought, wow, I didn't realize it was obvious even then, but I guess it was. But that was really me as a kid. I was a very... and the other thing about me, I guess, that I could say is I was the defender of my crowd. There was always different cliques, and I was always the kid who had to stand up to the bullies. That was me every time, and there were a lot of them in my neighborhood, so it seemed that I was always in a situation where I had to stand up to people, and that was something I think I learned from my dad, who was the police officer. I went to college at a place called Alfred University in upstate New York, western New York State. Had a great experience there. Studied history and studied a lot of English literature. Those are my two majors. Lots of philosophy also. I was like Mr. Liberal Arts in college. This was in the early 1980s. While I was in college, I also did a lot of theater, did a lot of acting, and I was a disc jockey. I was a DJ in my college radio station. I kind of tried to absorb everything when I was there. While I was there, I received a scholarship to study at Oxford University, which was a really nice experience for me. I studied political theory. I was 21 years old, and I had a wonderful experience there. It really opened my eyes to a lot of things. at that point in my life, I had, I guess I was still searching for my orientation in life. I think I entertained every possible idea out there, from straight scientific materialistic atheist beliefs to a belief in pantheism and, you know, deity is everywhere and in all things. But I always had a very scientific sort of attitude, which was that if I'm going to believe something, I need to have it sort of demonstrated to me in some logical way. I'll never forget, I had a moment when I was in my mid-20s. I was feeding my dog, of all things, and I had a moment of insight. It was getting a can of dog food out to feed this wonderful creature who knew exactly what I was doing. He knew I was reaching in to get a can of dog food. I was opening the can, and I could watch him getting really excited. And as I put the food in the bowl and I watched him eat it, I was observing and thinking, he's a very intelligent creature. He knows me. He knows that there's food in that can, and he knows when I go through these motions that I'm about to feed him. But he doesn't know a couple of things. He doesn't know how the food got into the can to begin with, and he doesn't know how he was taken out of his natural environment to live with humans, and he doesn't know what the moon is, and he doesn't know what the sun is and what the stars are. There's a whole bunch of things he doesn't know. It's not that he doesn't know. He can't know because his brain just isn't wired for that kind of knowledge. And I thought, well, gee, Rich, you're such a smart fella. Your dog's at this level. You're at that level, maybe a little higher. What's higher than that? In other words, I had gone through my life at that point thinking, for me to believe in a transcendental reality is silly because there's no evidence for it. There's no proof for it. But it occurred to me that our own cognitive capabilities have their own definite limitations. And so for me to assume at that point in my life that I had all the answers figured out was kind of stupid, kind of premature. So at that moment, I was probably about 24 years old. I thought, let's just like keep your mind open to different possibilities. And from that point on, I've always been willing to look at evidence for all kinds of things that are beyond our normal paradigm. And that at that point, I went to graduate school, studied a lot of history, European history, Soviet and German, and then I did a lot of American diplomacy as I got master's degrees and then worked on a PhD, which I didn't finish, but I did a lot toward it. Left that whole thing and then started writing UFOs when I was in my early 30s, and that really changed my whole life. That was early 1990s. And I've been working that theme ever since. And the last thing by way of introduction that I would just say to you is I got interested in UFOs seemingly by accident. I was just in a bookstore, and I was bopping around looking for books, and I saw a UFO conspiracy book staring right at me. It was by the author Timothy Good. He's quite well known in the field, called Above Top Secret, The Worldwide UFO Cover-Up. And I was taken by this book and bought it and just absorbed it, and by then I was hooked. And really what I ended up doing was trying to write my own series of histories to try to understand how the UFO reality fits into our own world. But here's the rub. When I started looking at UFOs, I began as a strictly nuts and bolts kind of guy. After all, my training was that of a professional historian. I'm used to doing archival research. I'm used to making case the way a lawyer would make a case. You find evidence that is defendable, and you make your argument. I was not looking at the more esoteric, spiritual, non-material elements of this at that time in the beginning. But here's the thing about the UFO topic. It is when you stay in it long enough, you understand that this is a much more expansive intellectual exercise than simply keeping it nice contained as a, there's creatures, there's beings flying in these metallic or mechanical craft, and they're here from another planet. No, it doesn't really always look like that when you start looking at the sum total of events. There's some things going on here that stretch our reality. And so for the past 16, 17 years that I've been looking at this topic now, I have found that I, too, have had to learn to stretch my own paradigm of reality. Having said that, I try to do it in a way that I consider to be intellectually responsible, simply meaning it's fine for me to believe any number of things, but when I write about them or speak publicly about them, I still try to remember my training, which is to work off of evidence as best as what I think is a responsible argument, rather than simply going with my opinion. Opinions are easy. Everyone can have those. What I try to do is to have a judgment based on the available evidence. With
so
the realization that there's a lot out there.
Right. So let me ask you, have you had direct contact with an ET? Have you had, have you had something happen that, did they come and get you in the middle of the night? Were you standing out on the mesa and they came and beamed you up? Have you had something like that happen to you?
Let me say I have no direct evidence that has happened to me. Now, do I think that it hasn't happened? I'm going to leave that open for right now. What I'll say to you is I know that this happens. I do believe that there are beings that are here that are not like everyone else. And this is my opinion. My belief is that there's a wide range of those types of beings, that there's not just one kind. And if I were to guess whether I've had an interaction with a non-human or being of that type, I would probably say more likely yes than no.
Okay.
But I'm trying to be careful here, too.
I understand. So, have you had anything that took you to the edge of your sanity?
I've had communications with people, okay, with alleged insiders that have told me some pretty amazing things that are way, way beyond the paradigm of anything that most of us have grown up with. And they have occasionally made me question, when I'm not questioning the veracity of what I've been told, questioning the sanity of the world that I'm in. So I've been pushed, but I haven't been broken yet.
Yeah, well, I've been pushed a whole lot for about 30 years. And I just kept journaling it, write it down, put it in the vault,
Well, that's important. You've got to write all of it down.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, it's important.
Okay, I wanted to also ask you about time travel. In your research, have you determined the reality of time travel?
I guess what I would say is that time and space are not what our common sense tells us. We all kind of know this. Look, remote viewers, and there's no question in my mind that remote viewing is real and that it works. Remote viewers are able to see the future and the past, and the reason that they can do it is simply because the future and the past are not, they don't work the way our common sense tells us. And so that every single human being has the capability of seeing things outside their immediate time stream. I firmly believe this. Now, if that's what you mean by time travel,
I'm not talking about remote viewing. I'm talking about actual.
You're talking about going to another time.
Yes, I'm going to another time, and they
that,
can
and
see.
At this point, I'm not sure that I would say I believe it, but
okay.
I would not seek to debunk it.
Okay.
I know people who have claimed to have done time travel. And,
yeah.
I'm interested in talking with them. I'm just not yet convinced that actual time travel has happened.
Well, I can attest to it. I've had it happen to me.
Wow.
And I know that in some of the experiments that I have been journaling and tracking that it is a reality and
well,
that there
at some
are,
point, I'd love to talk with you personally more about it. Yeah, I'd love to.
Yeah, we will. Mm-hmm. Because, you see, they have access to when the actual event of disclosure is going to take place.
Do you have access to that? Because I'd love to know.
Well, we'll talk about this later.
Okay.
Okay. Are you familiar with our term starseed, and has it surfaced in your research?
I'm familiar with your term starseed. I think I understand what you mean by it. It has not surfaced independently in my research, except in this. Here's what I would say. I've had reason to wonder if there are living among us many, many people who are not of, who are spiritually speaking, because I believe in a soul, and I believe that we all have them, and that my personal opinion is that we recycle and come back more than one time. It's my opinion that not all of us are from here. Okay.
Okay.
And if that's what one means by starseed, then I would say I have
referring to. We have a starseed audience mostly that comes and listens to our show, and very, very dedicated starseed, by the way. And as I'm looking at their charts and I'm talking to them, I'm finding so many different species are represented on the planet. I've been able to look at charts and find people from the Pleiades and from Orion and from the Sirius. There's different things that I have found in a chart that lets me know some of the harmonics that they carry from other lifetimes. I also track the bloodline through DNA.
Well, see, now what I admire, I mean, that you're doing this and you're so very confident in what you're doing, and I'm not disputing any of it. From my perspective and my methodology, it's hard for me to be that confident.
Right.
What I have is an opinion.
Right. Well, it's not
going on, and I would never presume that I have a definite answer one way or the other about it.
Well, I thought you might have run into more people like me that had been tracking this. No, you have your job, and I have my job.
That's right. We're all working our turf.
That's absolutely. That's absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little about some of your experiences so far since you've released this book, After Disclosure. What kind of feedback are you getting, say, from the New Age movement?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, the book is still quite new. It really hasn't been available. It's less than 2 months that it's even been available for anyone to read. Came out at the very end of October. So it's still fairly new. I'm very, very gratified by the feedback that I've gotten from a number of readers. Not just in the New Age movement, but let's say the UFO movement in general, which I think there's a lot of overlap there. Overall, I would say the feedback is superlative. I mean, some of the most amazing things people have written to me, things like, wow, wonderful book, best book I've ever read on the subject. The thing about AD After Disclosure that is unique is that it is the first and only book so far to at least try to address how the world might look in a world in which we understand the reality of an ET phenomenon that's here on Earth, that is, that UFOs are real. realizing that there's a lot of variables involved in that, depending on the nature of these other beings, for one thing, and depending on how much disclosure we actually get. But nonetheless, my co-author, Bryce Zabel, and I really try to think this one through, and to try to be as creative and original and as logical as we could be to try to understand how the end of decades and generations of secrecy will really rock our world and transform our world in so many profound ways. And so because it's the first book ever really to deal with this in an in-depth way, what I've discovered is that people they get excited about it. I mean, writing a book is like raising a child and watching that child move out of the house. Because once that child is out of the house, he or she is an adult, and they're beyond your control, and they're doing their thing, and it's the same with a book. The book is beyond my control now, basically, and people interact with it on their terms, and I can tell you it is an absolute thrill for me to know that there are people who are very positively affected by this book.
Good. Tell us a little bit about how you met Bryce Zabel, and tell us a little, you know, a little bit about him.
Yeah, Bryce, what a lucky guy that I am to be able to work with someone as smart and professional and good as Bryce is. A little over a year ago, he contacted me. He's a former CNN journalist who became a TV producer, and he's probably best known for having created the television show Dark Skies back in the late 90s.
Oh, I loved it.
Well,
I loved that
I'm
show.
So glad. It was a great show. It's still a great show. It went for one full season on NBC. And think X-Files historically. He really did a very sophisticated version of the UFO cover-up set in the 1960s against the backdrop of the Kennedy assassination and all of that in the 60s and early 70s. And he called me, he contacted me about a year ago because he wanted to do a TV treatment of my two volumes of history, UFOs and the National Security State. Those two volumes are combined, like 1,200 pages, a lot of history in there. And Bryce had said, gosh, I wish I'd had your books available when I was doing my TV show. And he wanted to option my two books for television treatment for the future. And I said, well, that's fine, and let's do that. But really what happened is our conversations last winter really morphed into a discussion about disclosure. We discovered that this was a topic that was near and dear to both of our hearts. And one thing led to another, and by the spring of 2010, we thought we could do very efficiently and very nicely a book that envisions this world. And so really, I think starting in at the end of March, early April of 2010, we sat down and really wrote this book. Now, he's in Los Angeles, I'm in New York State, but we were able to do it. Basically, the wonder of the Internet, electronic copies of things, and we worked on this every day. We were in touch on the phone every day. So we really had our division of labor mapped out, and we wrote the book. By the beginning of September, mid-September, it was done, and then it was a matter of getting it to the printer. I published the book. I have a small publishing company, which is Keyhole Publishing, and so I handle all of that. And by the end of October, the thing was ready.
It's amazing. And, you know, I noticed that his Dark Skies DVD collection is coming out on December 18th. And to all of our Starseed listeners, that is a star date. That is when the sun will be 26 Capricorn. And those of you that heard me talk about the crystal grid, this matches the crystal grid, the day of the launching of Dark Skies. And I think that's pretty interesting.
Oh, yeah. Very nice. He'll love to know that.
Yeah, be sure to tell him, you know, that he has really, he's on a star date to release this information. In fact, you know, when I saw Dark Skies, I remembered thinking, oh, I think he's about 10 years too early with this, with some people. I remember
thinking that
at the time.
Very interesting thought of yours. And I really can't speak highly enough about Bryce. He, you know, on a couple of blogs that are out there, I saw criticism directed at the fact that Richard Dolan's working with a Hollywood guy and he's selling out and all of this nonsense. And in fact, Bryce is as dedicated a thinker on this topic. Absolutely, very sophisticated, very high level of integrity. And all that he wants to do is what I want to do, which is to understand this phenomenon and to express as clearly as we're able to what we happen to think about it.
Do you think that Bryce would come on our show and talk about his Dark Sky series?
Oh, I have no doubt he'd be very.
Would you ask him?
Yeah,
would you ask?
Absolutely.
Oh, good.
Of course I would. Yeah.
We'd love it. We'd love it.
He's a very.
Okay.
He'd give you a great interview. He's a very very articulate guy.
Okay. Let's talk about religion a little bit. Give us kind of a rundown on what you think this is going to happen to the different religious aspects of after disclosure.
Yeah, great question. It's really one of the most difficult and tricky elements of disclosure, it seems to me. And the reason is simply that many people, I guess, interpret the world through a religious lens, their particular religion. And look, the world has lots of different religious beliefs. And that goes along with different attitudes toward the UFO / ET / other, whatever these other beings are, phenomenon. So, in other words, there's you don't just have Christianity in the U.S., but you get different types of Christianity. There's the evangelical strain, and there's very, very liberal and progressive, let's say, strains of Christianity. And then there's, beyond that, there's what we would call the New Age movement, which is searching, and I think really a very creative spiritual movement that's continually seeking out what the answers are. And then you've got a bunch of other religious faiths. There's Islam, and there's Buddhist and Hindu traditions, there's Judaism, and on and on. So all of, and then there's many, many small religions, some of which I think will be deeply affected by disclosure. And then there, I think there'll be new religions to spring up as a result of disclosure. And so all of these are going to be in the mix. And one of the things I think is beyond a shadow of a doubt is that within the U.S., really throughout the world, there's going to be a division. This is not going to be a neat, but this is going to be very messy and maybe very unsatisfactory for a while, which is how evangelical Christianity interprets this as opposed to, let's say, the other spectrum, say, the New Age sort of open type of attitude toward this. Evangelicals, 2-1, are going to be very suspicious and distrustful of this, of the entities in a post-disclosure scenario. They're going to look at this very likely as Luciferian, as demonic, as something to be fought and opposed. On the other hand, there are going to be people who are going to look at this in exactly the opposite way. They're going to say, no, these other entities are here for our guidance and they're our mentors and so forth, and we need to embrace that and learn from them. And so human society is going to, we're going to have a very difficult time coming to an agreement on this. And here's one of the tricky things about disclosure, which really I think I should mention at this time, which is that disclosure, it's a paradox, really. I've looked at this like this for years. It's impossible, but it is inevitable. And it's impossible because the powers that be have maintained secrecy on this for generations, and they have no motivation, none, to give this secret up. I feel that they would stand to lose too much, certainly in the short term. And look, anytime you've lied to the world for 60-plus years, it's going to be a tricky proposition to suddenly admit, oh, yeah, by the way, there are these other entities out there, and we don't have control over that. On the other hand, it's inevitable. Disclosure is inevitable because of the nature of our own society. We, the people, are changing so dramatically in the last 50 years, in the last 100 years, certainly, but even in the last decade or two. We are leapfrogging over ourselves in terms of our technological and social and, indeed, spiritual transformation now that we did 50 years ago, and we're not going to look the same in another 20 years or so. Our capabilities of detecting anomalous phenomena, detecting other intelligences, is going to increase, not decrease. And so what's going to happen, in my opinion, and the reason this disclosure is inevitable, is because I believe something will happen that is going to force the issue out. There's going to be maybe a major sighting, too many people captured on what will then be universal HD flip cameras, and they'll be able, you'll have 50 people capturing something in high definition, it'll be on YouTube, and boom, there it goes. Something like that can happen. But here's the problem. There can be a mass sighting that prompts disclosure, but that's not the same thing as knowing exactly who these other beings are. So we may get to a point where we prove that the UFO reality is real and that there's another intelligence behind it. But in terms of interpreting who these other beings are and what their agenda or agendas, plural, happen to be, I have a feeling that we're going to have many, many long debates about this subsequent to disclosure. And it's also possible that the secret keepers in our society themselves don't know all the answers. And so, in other words, disclosure is not going to solve a darn thing, really. It's going to open up an entirely new Pandora's box of questions. Who are these other beings? Are they wearing white hats or black hats? Should we worry about them or should we embrace them? Are there more than one group? Do they have multiple agendas? And interpreting all of that is going to be done for many people through the prism of their religious orientation, their spiritual orientation. And it may take generations for that to get resolved until we all sort of have a new understanding of what we're dealing with.
Well, I must tell you, Richard, that I was raised a Baptist, and I was pretty really into the church, into my religion. And then as time went on, and one day when I was in contact with my extraterrestrial buddies, I said, I want you to take me and show me the true religious material that I need to know about spirituality on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
After it was revealed to me and after I was shown, then I realized there was very little truth on this planet about the spirituality, that all religions had been formed and directed in such a way as to control the people on the planet.
Yeah.
And once I was shown that, well, of course, that was one of those insanity moments, and I had to go lay down and look at the ceiling for a couple of days over that one. But and this is the kind of thing that I think will happen to a lot of people that you know, are going to have the veil totally ripped off their face.
I agree.
It is going to be a rip and tear. It will be a rip and tear.
Well, a lot of it's going to depend on what exactly is revealed. If it's all going to be good stuff, that's one thing. If there's a mixture, my own opinion.
I think there's going to be, has to be a mixture.
I personally believe so. I think that in fact, entities out there, in my own opinion, that there are some extremely wonderful, angelic, beneficent beings that are involved in some way with us here. I also have come to the opinion that there are other types of entities that are, what we would consider to be against our best interests. And so
they're little rascals. That's who they are.
And so really, the one question is, are we going to be disclosing ourselves into a new Cold War, essentially, of these competing entities, if that's what the case is? Where does the U.S. and other global militaries fit into the picture? Who's operating all of these UFOs? Is it all of something that we've created, or are there other beings that are operating other technology? And I think that...
Well, I think the answer to that is both,
yeah,
right?
That is my opinion. So who are these? So are they all spiritual entities? And the answer, I think, is probably no. But they may have command over certain spiritual capabilities and powers. I have a feeling we're going to be moving into a very complex reality in a post-disclosure world. I don't pretend that I know it all, but it certainly looks to me that we are, as you just said, really on the verge of having the veil ripped from in front of us. And I look around myself at my friends and society here, and I see a lot of people who are not ready for this reality. Who is ready? Who's ready for their first child? No one. And yet there you have it, and you got to raise that child, and you have to learn on the fly. And
yeah,
my hunch is
yeah.
that our own society is going to be
yeah.
in a very similar situation.
Right. Well, there's several religions that, you know, adhere to angels, the angelic presence. And with my, my history with what I've gone through, I understand that most angelic presence are really ETs. You know, mm-hmm. that's my experience. So it's like, okay, if they can get through the angelic presence being part of the ETs, maybe, you know, maybe it'll go down a little better. But maybe they'll still want to just say, no, we want to keep angels where they are.
Right.
You know, so, I had an incident with Billy Graham years ago. And, he and I had a long conversation, and I simply said to him, why don't you tell the people the truth? And he said, you know, the sheep can't handle it. They can't handle it right now.
No, wait. You told Billy Graham, why can't you tell the people the truth about what? About E.T.?
About E.T.s. I asked him, I said, why don't you tell them the truth? And he said, because they can't handle it. The sheep, he called them. He said, the sheep cannot handle it. We got this huge, we had a huge discussion. I was with Robert Goulet, and we were drinking Jack Daniels, and it was one of those really exceptional times when Robert pulled a big trick on me and said, come with me, I have somebody I want you to meet, after he poured four Jack Daniels down me. Then, you know, opens the door, Johnny Cash, and we walk in, and there's Billy Graham, and I'm going, oh, no. You know, so
now that's
anyway,
a cool
place.
I'd love to have been a fly on that wall.
Oh, so we went over and sat down, and I started talking to him about it because I really wanted to challenge him on it. Now, here's the funny thing that happened after that.
Mm-hmm.
I downloaded a lot of information. I told him what had happened to me.
Right.
And I said, at some point in time, you're going to need to tell the people
right.
that angels are real and that angels could be part of an ET faction. 2 years later, in Sarasota, Florida, I was there, and he was in Tampa, and he announces to the world, yes, angels are real.
How about that?
Yeah.
How about that? Fascinating. What a fascinating story.
Yeah, you know. Oh, I got lots of them.
Hey, for the record, I do a pretty fair Robert Goulet shower singing imitation. So,
do you?
Yeah, I'm not gonna do that here for the listeners, but just saying, drives my teenage daughter crazy. But
Well, Robert and I were great friends, and he was a star person, and knew
sure
it.
Sure was.
He had a lot of ET experiences.
Wow.
I helped him through a lot of them. He'd call me in the middle of the night and say, "You better get over here." And I would just, you know, drop whatever I was doing and get dressed or whatever and come over. And you know, we'd have to have probably several drinks to discuss it.
Well, that's
but
fascinating.
He had a lot of experiences. And some of them kind of messed him over. You know, he wasn't able to come to terms with some mm-hmm. of the things that happened. And then he and Elvis would talk about it because Elvis had experiences also. There's a whole group there in Las Vegas at that time that, you know, they were picking them up, taking them aboard ship, dropping them back down, and some of them would remember, some of them wouldn't.
Wow.
And that's another story, yeah.
Well, you ran into some pretty cool circles, I gotta say. You ran with a big crowd.
Yeah, I really had a really full, exciting life. I'd like to ask you what you think Islam might think of this. What is your hit on Islam and about how they'll approach this after disclosure?
Yeah, I have two major things that I think are relevant here. One is that within Islam itself, there really is no problem with the idea of extraterrestrial life. It's not against the Islamic creed in any way. And in fact, in the Quran, there is an explicit statement that Allah had created many worlds, many universes, I think, or many worlds with other people on those worlds. So, and then, you know, if you talk to Muslims about extraterrestrial, the ones that I've met, I've spoken to many, they don't really have a problem with the idea of against the creed. It's not part of the creed that you have to believe in it, but it's also not opposed to the Islamic creed. So on that level, I don't think that that Muslims will necessarily have a problem with it. Now, there's a lot of other nuance that's going to go into it. There's a longstanding belief in Central Asian world about the jinn or genies, what we would say. And I have a strong feeling that there are going to be many people who interpret this ET presence in relation to longstanding all ancient stories of the jinn, many of whom were, some of whom are somewhat benevolent, and others whom are definitely not benevolent, very mischievous and dangerous. The other thing that is going to affect the Islamic world, though, is not really religious per se, but it's going to be political. Much of the Islamic world happens to be in oil-rich, petroleum-producing states like Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, of course, Iran. And in the nature of petroleum is going to go through, I think, a very significant transformation in a post-disclosure world. And petroleum itself is going to be very severely affected because it's my own belief that there's going to be a new source of energy that will be learned in a post-disclosure scenario, thereby really transforming our petro world into something beyond that. So in that sense, there's going to be a lot of political destabilization, and my guess is that it's going to cause a lot of social unrest in Islamic countries, in those oil-producing regions. That's going to probably rock the Islamic world. But in terms of ET belief systems and so on, that of itself I don't think is really going to be a problem for most Muslims. But petroleum is going to affect a lot of the Muslim world. And I could see, for example, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, like the Arab, especially the Arab Muslim world, I think will be very turned upside down in a lot of ways by disclosure.
Well, you know, through my 30 years of dealing with extraterrestrials and tracking the bloodlines and the starseed, one of the things I have found is something called the Tesla kids on the planet. And I can tell you from what I have experienced with these Tesla kids, they're sitting back in some of these woods, in mountains areas or secluded away, and they're ready with their cleaning up technologies for the planet. They've been given to them by the ETs already. Some of them, you know, what gets me about a lot of them is they all look alike. The ones that I meet, they all look like David Copperfield. They have the dark hair and the you know, the eyebrows, and they all have the same type of paranoid personality about coming out into the world. A lot of them are on drugs and alcohol. But what do they have? They have these amazing technologies to clean up the planet.
Wow.
It's just, yeah, I've been tracking them for a long time. They trust me, and they, you know, they sought me out. I'm just part of, you know, when I moved to Cripple Creek, I didn't know it, but Tesla caught lightning in a jar on the property that we bought. And people would start coming up there walking on the property. They'd say, "Can we walk on your property?" And I'd go, "Well, yeah, why?" "Well, Tesla caught lightning in a jar." And then when I'd start seeing them, they all look like, you know, David Copperfield. And I thought, well, what's this look-alike thing happening? And the more I looked into it, the more I researched it, I said, oh, my goodness, this is a huge plan from someplace.
Fascinating. Well, I certainly agree completely that there are going to be technologies we will have access to at some point that are going to be will enable us to do environmental cleanup. It all comes down to energy. Because look, whatever these objects are using to zip around the skies, it's not petroleum. It's something that and so when there's a disclosure event, how long do you really think it's going to be before we figure out what it is? Whether it's zero point energy, something that exotic, or something more mundane like controlled nuclear fusion, which is clean, which is essentially has helium as its byproduct, no radiation. Both of those, and there may be other solutions out there, would potentially release enormous amounts of energy without creating a carbon footprint. And in terms of environmental cleanup, the biggest obstacle we really have, I would say, is in terms of energy. Removing toxins from the environment, for example, is an energy-intensive thing and not an easy thing to undertake. But if you've got abundant clean energy, you actually can do all kinds of things that we had initially seen as impossible.
Well, I have been into the warehouses at Oak Ridge, and I have seen technologies they haven't boxed up, okay? I've witnessed it. I've seen it. And we have technologies 150 years ahead of what they're telling us that we have. Okay?
Okay. Now, where have you seen it?
At Oak Ridge. Yeah, I saw it in 1996. So, you know, I was pulled in with a group to find ways to use environmental technology. Some of these boys didn't have contracts anymore because we weren't at war. So they brought a group. Al Gore called us. A group of us together and said, look, you know, can you find work for these guys? Let's go into the, you know, the big barns that they have these storehouse devices in and pick some and let's put them out to market. And so, you know, I was like, whoa. And the first day I was there, I turned to my right and I said, you know, I gave my name and I And I said, what do you do? And they said, well, I'm in charge of Area 51 and have been for 25 years, and don't ask me any questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I just gulped. And I turned to the next guy. I said, what do you do? And he said, well, I'm responsible for aspartame. Well, I just kind of wanted to choke him. So
right.
It's like, you know, it's like, ooh, I was sitting.
But I wasn't Donald Rumsfeld,
really,
was it?
No, but it was real close. It was the guy that actually put it to market. Okay.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so it's like I've been around, I've been able to see and know, and but I'll tell you, the day that I was in that huge warehouse, you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of the day that Indiana Jones
exactly.
had to put the Ark of the Covenant in the big warehouse.
Uh-huh.
And I turned to my business partner that day and I said, you know, this is like Indiana Jones movie. You know, wow, look at what. And we got to see cancer cures. We got to see all kinds of stuff. Energy cleans up, you know, energy devices that blow your mind. So, we've got them.
Well, heck, you got to write about this. Maybe you already have.
I have. I've already done it.
All right. I need to get on the stick there and check out your stuff because
you've got some stuff going on
there, Lavender.
You know what? I have not released this to my radio audience yet. So they kind of got a little plug tonight with this, but
all right.
I've been leading up in my stories to some of these things that we're talking about now. Back to your book.
Yes.
I want you to know that on Thanksgiving Day, after all the turkey and everything, I was, just kind of settling in mm-hmm. with all my purple and my kitties, and I picked up your book, and then I read the contents.
Right.
Had to take a nap after the contents because I started tracking every single line of that was going to be in the book. And so I took a little nap and I woke up and something kind of came over me, and it was like I had 1,000 eyes reading this book at the same time I was. And it was like, okay, get ready because here's the download.
Wow.
Here's the download with every sentence, every paragraph. I could only do 32 pages.
That's basically through the end of chapter one, I think.
That's it. I mean, it's like, okay. And then I get on the phone and I start calling. You know, I called Ariel and I called Sierra. I said, listen, girls, you know, get a hold of your Bippy. This is it. Get a hold. This is major. And so that's when we started thinking about having you on the show. That's when we started talking about your book. We've talked about it now for 2 weeks, you know, and we have a lot of people that have ordered it. We have a lot of people that have gifted it for Christmas. And I try to send them to your particular site, although I do have a client that says, oh, send them to Amazon, my son's vice president of Amazon. So it's like I'm telling both people, go just get the book, get it in your hands.
It actually benefits Bryce and me a little more if they get it directly from our site. But if it's bought through Amazon, they'll get it just the same, and certainly no problem there.
And so how many, do you have a lot of interviews lined up? How about television? Have they come to you yet?
For AD, we actually have the possibility of working AD into a TV treatment. We're talking to some people in the TV industry about this right now. I do radio, Bryce and I both do radio and internet interviews pretty regularly. In fact, you and I had to schedule this because I have another one later today. So I keep myself very busy in terms of interviews. And I do television interviews pretty frequently. I've got, they all take a while to be produced. So like if I do an interview now, it might not air on television for several months, depending on the timeline. But I think AD, he and I are hopeful that we actually might get some TV treatment of our book, which I think would just
right.
It lends itself, I think, very well to a television treatment.
Right.
So,
are you familiar with our friend Jeff Peckman that had this initiative 300 on the ballot in Denver? Yes,
I know Jeff. I think Jeff is a very good man. I support what he's doing with that. And of course, that initiative did not pass in Denver. Nonetheless, I think they had a respectable showing. A number of people did support what he was trying to do. Look, it's all for the goal, which is to raise awareness among the public that there are other beings that are here interacting with us on planet Earth. And again, everyone's got their contribution that they can make. You do, I do, Jeff does, and many other people are out there trying to raise awareness and to prepare humanity for what is going to be inevitable. We're not going to be in a 2010 holding pattern indefinitely. The world is changing. We are changing. And to think that secrecy on this topic is going to maintain itself indefinitely, I think it's just foolishness. The truth is going to be much stronger than all of the types of secrecy that have worked against it for these many years.
Right. One of the things that I opened up to the book that I wanted to ask you about was, you know, in one of your titles it says, Martial Law Field Status, the Blowback, Collateral Damage and Unintended Consequences.
Right.
Okay. And I just want to read just a couple of things here. The Great Panic of Year One.
Yeah.
The Fire Spreads, Crack Foundations, Government Dancing in the Dark, Truth Commissions, Amnesty and Pardon.
That's right.
The one that got me, though, was Can You Arrest the Others and Can You Sue the Others?
Yeah.
And I just went, whoa, that
well,
is
we tried to really think outside the box on this one, and it might strike someone as comical to think, you know, sue an alien for abductions. And, you know, as we point out, it's very likely that they wouldn't consider our law something that would fall under, that they would be under our jurisdiction. Nonetheless, I would bet you that there'll be some enterprising lawyers who, in a post-disclosure world, would be willing to try to take on a case. Why not? Certainly,
don't you know it?
Lawsuits,
yeah, don't you know?
Lawsuits will abound. I mean, think about a person who's gone through their life with abduction experiences.
Oh.
Very traumatic many times, and yet being unable to discuss this because their power structure that they live within denies the reality of it, and so they go through their entire life living in an isolated manner, unable to sort of resolve what's going on. They're going to be very angry.
How about the ones in the mental institutions?
You know it. Exactly. And so what we're really going to see is lawsuits. That'll be one and that's just personal class action lawsuits. There's going to be defense contractor lawsuits. Think of it this way. If you and I are each competitors in the defense industry and I win a contract that you lose out on because now you learn that I had access to exotic technology that because I was in with the in crowd and you weren't, you might sue for you know, unethical business practices. I personally have spoken with insiders who said to me point blank that this was a concern, one concern of many of a disclosure. And it just seems so mundane, lawsuits. But there you go. Lawsuits are a concern. Because in a post-disclosure world, it's not like, you know, the manna from heaven is going to come down and we're all going to hit utopia all at once. We're still going to have our world, our society. It's not going to change all at once. We're still going to have our institutions, and we're going to have to deal with a great deal of messy past behavior that we're going to have to resolve. Truth commissions, which you just mentioned, we wrote about the likelihood of that being on the table for the future. And then the panic.
Yeah, and how about repealing the law of gravity?
Yes, well, the technologies that are likely to be learned about are going to include anti-gravity, or let's call it field propulsion, something that will allow us to get around gravity in a way that we've seen these objects being able to do. It doesn't strike me as crazy at all to think that in the near future after disclosure, we are going to learn just how a flying saucer operates.
Well, and our government's known about this for some time, and they've been using them, you know, for a long time too.
Well,
so,
when we call it our government,
when that, yeah,
I use that phrase a bit loosely. I mean, who are these guys? Are they our government?
Mm-hmm.
One of the issues that I've tried to explore in this book, and also in my previous volume of history, is the idea of what I call a breakaway civilization, and by that I simply mean if you look in the black budget world, you know, what I think we're finding is that they've sort of run away from the rest of us poor slobs, including our government. More and more evidence that I've come across tells me that this has become privatized, that the secrecy regarding UFO reality is privatized. It's not entirely a government thing. When you look at how private contractors dominate federal policy in so many ways, we see this in the black budget world too, forget UFOs, just in general. And so I think the same thing applies with the UFO ET reality. That, and so who is in control? Someone has had access to this technology, but I don't think that, it's in the U.S. military arsenal. We're not, the U.S. military is not using these things to fight their wars in Iraq or Afghanistan or anywhere else. Otherwise, those wars would have ended, and we're still fighting them.
Oh, I think they they've tried them on a couple occasions, but remember, they don't want to end the war.
certainly agreed with that. They want to, bleed that sucker dry and bleed us dry in the process. But there, I have not personally seen evidence that this exotic tech in the war. I mean, I've not come across any persuasive stories to me that have said that this is the case. But I do think that these technologies are being used. I happen to think they're being used for a different classified level, that is, to deal with these others, to deal with an off-world reality, which is considered, I think, too important to waste on mere geopolitical warfare.
Right. What do you think about the miniseries V that's been on TV, and I noticed that it's coming back in January?
Yeah.
What's your impression about how that's been navigated toward the public?
Great question. I think, well, it's an interesting show. Of course, it, V is derived from a 1980s version.
Oh, I know. I saw it. Yeah.
Yeah, and that was an interesting show, too, in its own right. In fact, that might be the first show that depicted the aliens as human-looking reptilians. There's a thought. That was back in the early 1980s. The current version of V, I think, is a very well-done show. I've followed it. I find it interesting. It's there are two ways you can really look at the presence of these beings here on Earth. You can look at them as they're predators and we've got to fight them, or you can look at them as they're here to help us and guide us and we need to embrace them. Good TV is made by fear. So V is a show, like all of these other ones, that is based on conflict and violence and creating a sense of opposition between us and them. It makes for great drama. I think that there is reason to think that there's some truth in such a situation, but it's certainly not the whole story.
That's right. That's right. Well, I'm saying that we're coming close to the end of the hour.
Wow, and blew by, didn't it?
I did. Didn't, when we're having a good time, that's what happens. And I just wanted to say that most of our audience that listens to Starseed Radio Academy have a sense of longing to know more about the information that you have, and I encourage everyone to go on your website, www.afterdisclosure.com, and take a look at it, his research, his book. Get his book. I think it's deserving to be in your library. Also, I'd like to say to those of you that have incarnated at this time, this was one of the reasons you're here, for disclosure. And with that, Richard, I'd like to say thank you so much. I'm sorry that you weren't able to be with us live. Maybe you can come back and be with us live later on.
I would love to, Lavender, absolutely. I'm just grateful for the chance to be able to chat with you at all, and for people to hear you know, any little bit about AD After Disclosure. I'm very excited about this book. I think it's nice to be able to write a forward-looking book, something that... And by the way, I just want to mention the final message, if I have any message in this book, it's no fear. I really believe that fear is our greatest enemy, and that although a post-disclosure world can give us many, many challenges, which might, you know, really be difficult, nonetheless, I really feel that that we are up to it as a society, as a species, and that we should learn that fear is not going to be helpful, and that we can deal with this in a mature, fearless manner. And we'll find things in ourselves that we may not have
right.
realized yet.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I love the phrase, what was once impossible is now inevitable. And with that, back to you, Ariel. Thank you, Richard.
Oh, thank you so much, Lavender. I love the interview. It's just a joy.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.